All right, let me give you a bit of a backdrop on me before I dive into that wild ride of a story I want to share. So I'm just your average Joe, or in my case, let's just say my name's Alex. I've lived in Pittsburgh pretty much all my life, but my family's spread out. My brother, he ended up settling down in Maryland, not too far from where this whole crazy thing went down. We're close, always have been, so I make the trip out to see him pretty often. It's a routine drive for me, one I've done countless times. Cruising down Interstate 68, music blaring, just lost in my thoughts. Never had any reason to think twice about it. Just a straightforward drive through some scenic spots. This particular trip wasn't any different at first. I'd spent the weekend with my brother, catching up, just doing regular family stuff. It was a good visit, the kind that leaves you feeling recharged. But as I was making my way back home, something happened that, well, let's just say it's not something you forget. My life's pretty mundane, honestly. The most adventurous I get is trying a new hiking trail or hitting up a concert at Stage AE by the stadium. But that evening, on a drive I've done a million times, I saw something that doesn't fit into the world as I know it. It's funny, isn't it? How one moment can make you question everything you thought you knew about what's out there. So, as I was driving on Interstate 68 westbound, when I noticed cars pulled off to the side of the road at about mile marker 33, just before Keezer's Ridge, it looked as if there may have been an accident, so I slowed down as well. As soon as I did, people started getting out of their vehicles and pointing up into the woods, which are just past a fence line from where we were parked. There was something standing near a tree. It seemed to be looking around, almost like it was surveying its surroundings. This thing stood there looking around nervously while people snapped pictures with their phones and cameras. Some folks who were more daring began walking towards it, trying to get closer. But after only taking about 3 steps forward, they turned back and ran full speed back toward their cars. That was really intriguing to me. Once everybody realized that nobody knew what this thing actually was, everyone got back into their vehicles except me, which, who knows why I did that. But anyway, my camera has video capability, so I zoomed in with it as far as possible and recorded everything I could. The area is wooded here, but where we stopped is mostly open pasture land leading up onto mountainsides. At one point, more vehicles started to stop, and one of the vehicles pulled over across both lanes ahead of us, causing traffic backups. The driver must have been completely confused. People started honking horns, yet he stayed parked, blocking both lanes. I'm guessing he was trying to get a better look or something. The thing stood there in the same spot for about 5 minutes, then turned and walked back into the woods behind it. That's when I lost sight of it. As soon as that happened, everyone started getting back into their cars. So there I was, standing by the side of the road, camera in hand, feeling like I'd just stepped into a scene from a sci-fi movie. My mind was racing with questions. What was that thing? Why was it here? Did anyone else get a good look at it? But as quickly as the chaos erupted, it settled. People were ready to move on. The traffic cleared up, and there I was, still trying to process what I'd just seen. I got back into my car, my hands shaking a bit as I put my camera down on the passenger seat. The drive home was a blur. I kept replaying the footage on my camera, trying to make sense of it. I knew I had to share this with someone, but who would believe me? When I finally got home, I immediately called my brother. I told him everything, from the unexpected stop on the interstate to the mysterious figure in the woods. He was skeptical, of course, but he could hear the seriousness in my voice. We talked about what it could possibly be, throwing around ideas from a lost hiker in a weird outfit to something not of this world. It was the kind of conversation we hadn't had since we were kids, letting our imaginations run wild. But this wasn't imagination. This was real, and I had the video to prove it. I spent the next few days obsessing over the footage, doing some research, trying to find any reports of similar sightings, or maybe some local folklore that could explain what I saw. Nothing fit. It was as if what I'd encountered didn't belong to our world, or was so rare that it hadn't been documented yet. The video, as clear as it was, raised more questions than answers. I uploaded it to a few forums, hoping someone could shed light on the mystery. but all I got were wild theories, and a few skeptics calling it a hoax. In the end, I never found out what that thing was. Life went back to normal, or as normal as it could after an experience like that. The video remains on my computer, a digital relic of the unexplainable. I still think about that day, wondering about the possibilities of what exists just beyond our understanding. It's a reminder that no matter how mundane our lives may seem, there's always room for a bit of mystery, or maybe even a crazy encounter with something that shouldn't even be alive. I hope this email finds you well. My name is Officer John, and I am a police officer with the Phoenix Police Department. I recently had an encounter that I believe may be of interest to your listeners. It was a quiet night on patrol when dispatch received a call about suspicious activity in the North Mountain Preserve, located just outside of Phoenix, Arizona. As the closest unit, I was dispatched to investigate what was happening and report back to base. Arriving at the preserve, I parked my patrol car near one of the trailheads, the one nearest where the encounter supposedly happened, and stepped out into the cool desert air. I remember that the moon was full that night, casting an eerie glow over the landscape, and as I walked, I was very aware that the only sound was that of my own footsteps crunching on gravel as I made my way down one of the trails. There was an uneasiness to the night, but that didn't clue me in at all to what was about to happen. As I walked deeper into the preserve, an unsettling physical feeling washed my body. It felt as if someone or something was watching me from within the shadows of huge saguaro cacti and twisted mesquite trees, like something was darting around and keeping up with me. Goosebumps prickled across my skin despite this being Phoenix, where it doesn't get too cold. Suddenly, a distinct movement caught my eye off to my left. Turning towards it, I saw a figure dart behind a large boulder up ahead. Instinct kicked in and adrenaline surged through me as I drew my flashlight and cautiously approached. Peering around the boulder, what met my gaze is something I will never forget if I live 100 lifetimes. There before me stood what can only be described as a creature straight out of nightmares, tall and emaciated with long limbs ending in claw-like hands that seemed too big for its body. Its skin was pale white and stretched tightly across its skeletal frame like parchment paper, ready to tear off of its frame at any moment. Its eyes were large orbs devoid of color or life, nothing more than empty black voids staring back at me. For a moment, everything stood still, the silence between us heavy with tension. I had heard stories, you know, the kind you tell as kids or among officers after a long night, but nothing. Absolutely nothing could have prepared me for something like this actually happening to me. My training didn't cover encounters with creatures that shouldn't exist outside of folklore. Yet, here we were, standing and facing each other. Two tried to steady my voice, reaching for my radio to call for backup, but found myself unable to look away from those eyes and unable to even talk. The creature, as if sensing my intent, let out a sound that chilled me to the bone. A low, guttural moan that seemed to echo off the mountainside. It was a sound that I would never be able to describe in words. It was, literally, otherworldly. Without warning, the creature turned and vanished into the night, its movements almost too fast for the eye to follow. I then started frantically looking around, trying to determine where it went and if it was still close by. Basically, was my safety in trouble, or not? I almost couldn't function at this point, but knew I needed to pull it together to keep myself alive. So, I dug into my training and gathering my wits, I cautiously continued my patrol, expecting the creature to reappear at any moment. But unbelievably, the rest of the night passed without incident, the only sounds being the occasional rustle of wildlife and the distant hum of the city, both of which caught me off guard more than once. In the days that followed, I found myself obsessing over the encounter. I scoured old police reports, both local and within the surrounding areas, as well as online forums. I even reached out to other officers to see if anyone had experienced anything similar. The answers were always the same: rumors and half-beliefs about creatures of the desert, but nothing concrete, No one had actually seen anything in person, just me. It was as if the creature I had seen existed in a world where it didn't want to be found, and yet I was the lucky one to come across it, if you can call that lucky. I'm sharing this story with you not as a warning or a tale of caution, but as a reminder to be aware and keep an open mind. Despite our advances in technology and science, there are things out there that defy explanation, that remind us of the limits of our understanding. As for me, I continue my patrols, always half expecting to encounter that creature again. But whether I do or not, that night in the North Mountain Preserve has changed me. It's a reminder that sometimes, the most profound encounters are those that leave us with more questions than answers, and that the world is far more mysterious than we could ever imagine. Let me start off by saying that I am someone who loves to camp. I've been all around, and throughout my entire life, I've never had an interaction with an animal that frightened me, even in the least. That is how I know that the thing I'm going to tell you about is no animal. My sister and I decided that for a summer trip, around 5 years ago, we would go backpack camping all across the Great Plains area of the U.S. We hit all the best spots, Iowa, Kansas, Nebraska, and the like. Finally, we were in Colorado. I wanted to stay in Colorado for a while because it's always been my favorite. It's gorgeous there. We found an amazing campground to station ourselves in for the next week or so and set up shop. We got to explore, and we were having a blast, hiking all around this really scenic mountain area. Then, on about our third day, when the sun started to set, we began making our way back to the campsite. But on the way there, we got a bit distracted. As we were hiking, we stopped to drink some water and eat a protein bar. When all of a sudden, out of basically nowhere, the whole area reeked. It smelled like garbage at first, but as we sat there a bit, it started to smell worse than that. It was like rotting flesh all around us. I made sure my sister noticed too, that I wasn't going crazy, but obviously neither of us knew what it could be. We thought maybe a skunk, but we knew those weren't really native to the area. Our next guess was a dead animal or something. And while we didn't care so much about that, we were a bit worried something bigger was going to come by and eat it. Or worse, something bigger already did eat it, and now we were in its way. We finished eating, agreed that we would go in the opposite direction back to the site, but then completely stopped in our tracks. Ahead of us, several yards, luckily what I thought to be a safe enough distance, there was this figure. I don't really know how else to describe it, other than a figure. As I said, you know, it was getting dark, and I didn't really get to see any details of what this thing looked like other than its general shadow. And it was a big, big shadow. A big shadow that had these insanely huge antlers. So now I'm thinking, what is this? A big elk? A moose? My sister and I are just staring at it. Then she has the bright idea of actually wanting to approach it. I stopped her and instead suggested we yell at it or to it, or something else first. So we both call out a pretty basic hello to the thing, and it's quiet for a few moments. Then things got really scary. The voice of a little girl, clear as day, shoots back, "Hi, can you help me?" We both absolutely flip out because the thing we are looking at is not only definitely not a little girl, and arguably, it's not even human. Maybe if we had heard that voice call out earlier, when we couldn't see anything, it might have tricked us. But we were staring at this giant beast and hearing a little girl's voice come out of it. It was disgusting and horrifying. And even as I sit here now looking back on the whole thing, it didn't even sound that much like a real little girl. It sounded like someone trying their best to mimic the voice of a little girl, you know? Like it was a recording maybe, or some kind of really convincing impression. But to this day, I know for sure that the voice wasn't authentic. Then, like it almost noticed we weren't falling for it, the thing's eyes start to glow. This is the bit of the story where people will usually roll their eyes. Tell me that I'm just trying to be funny, but I kid you not. The eyes of this thing start to dimly glow yellow, and next thing we knew, it was gone. It literally disappeared. We were both obviously quite shaken up by this whole thing. Whatever this creature was, not only was it trying to lure us towards it, but it was massive, had horns, and reeked to a degree that was nearly unbearable. This whole thing was now feeling supernatural or something. Anyway, we instantly realized that approaching it was absolutely the wrong choice. We slowly retreated and made our way back to the campsite and said, "Screw it, it's already past dark. If we stay here, we're probably safer than if we take the several mile hike through the wilderness to get back to the car." I can't lie, I don't think either of us slept a wink that night. It was crazy. I mean, what the hell was that thing? But then, of course, that wasn't even the last of it. The next morning, right? We get up, we start packing up all of our stuff, and lo and behold, just as we're about to get the hell out of there, the smell is back. That nostril-burning stench of rot was just all around us, just like the night before. I'm a little freaked out, but I also didn't know if the smell was necessarily related to the thing we saw. After we finish gathering our things, cautiously of course, and I'm looking around like a crazy person for any signs of something off. I didn't want anything freaky to happen again, so I was on high alert. I heard a few noises, but ultimately nothing else happened, and we were fine. Everything turned out okay in the end. We were able to get back to the car safely, and there was no sign of the creature again, aside from the nasty smell. However, there was one little thing that creeped me out. Back at the campsite, there was a deer that stood a short distance away, that was staring at us as we finished packing. For a moment, I thought maybe the smell was coming from the deer, but I obviously can't be sure. All I do know is that the deer was very, very intently watching us put our stuff away, and even followed us a bit as we made our way out the area. My sister thought the deer was cute, but I had a strange feeling about it, like something was off, like it knew how to think or something. Anyway, I don't know for sure, but that's my tale. Thank you for listening, as it's definitely something that has stuck with me for a long time. I was on a hiking trip through Idaho with my partner, and we had heard of an elusive backcountry hot spring when we were in town and starting out. We got the general location of the hot spring from another hiking group we met at the lodge we were staying in. It was pretty remote, but they claimed it was worth it to make the hike. They camped there for 2 nights and said they didn't see a single soul on the trail there or back. The fall weather was starting to come in, making the idea of the wilderness hot spring seem pretty enticing. There was rumored to be a hot waterfall in the area, fed by the geothermal spring. The other group were unable to find it, but we figured we'd try our luck. We packed our overnight backpacking gear and headed out that morning. The road to the trailhead was a rough drive. We definitely needed to use the four-wheel drive a couple of times along the way. I remember it was cold. We wore our light, packable winter jackets, but it wasn't quite cold enough yet for parkas. There was no snow on the ground yet, but the night temperature was expected to get below freezing. There was a winter storm on its way, but we planned to be back in town well before then. The hike to the spring was only about 4 miles from the trailhead, but it was challenging to say the least. The trail was rocky and, in some places, very difficult to keep track of. I could see why there weren't many people up there. We made it to the spring a couple of hours before sunset. It was exactly where the other hikers said it would be. And, while the trail had worn us out, slipping into the steaming hot spring was absolutely worth it. The air was cold enough that the steam pooled around the edges like mist. The place was magical. I don't know just how long we stayed in the spring, but it was probably too long for our own good. That night, we set up our little backpacking tent and planned to get up before dawn the next morning and watch the sunrise from the spring. Everything was going perfectly, which usually doesn't happen on backpacking trips, no matter how well you might prepare. But as soon as the sun went down, we started hearing things outside our tent. It sounded like someone was walking around, first by the spring, and then near our campsite. At first, we thought it was an animal, but the footsteps were unmistakable. They were human. This hot spring was on National Forest land. It was open to the public, and camping was allowed wherever you felt like it. So, another hiker coming up here was well within their rights. Maybe they didn't see our tent and were hoping, like we were, that they would be able to enjoy the hot spring before the winter storm rolled in. Neither of us wanted to have a confrontation in the middle of the night in the Idaho forest. You hear all sorts of stories about crazy people out there, and we didn't want to take any chances. It was late in the season, but we both had bear spray canisters with us and kept them close throughout the night. We both got up just before dawn, like we had planned. I was the first to exit the tent and took a look around the area. There was a light dusting of snow on the ground, but nothing that wouldn't melt by midday. I checked for tracks, but there wasn't any sign of the mystery visitor that was wandering around the night before. For a brief moment, I thought maybe I had been imagining it. We ate breakfast, and still no sign of anything or anyone strange, so we decided to go for a soak in the spring before heading back down to the car. As we were heading to the pool, I noticed footprints around the edge. They were bare human feet. There was someone up here with us. The footprints went straight into the forest. There was no trail in that direction, just untamed woods. I couldn't fathom someone walking around without shoes in these temperatures, especially on freshly fallen snow. I was pretty scared, I'll be honest. The thought of someone out there messed up enough to be walking around barefoot had me on edge. For a moment, my mind wandered to the thought that we might not be dealing with a human at all. But I didn't let it stick. I didn't believe in those types of things. I told my partner that someone else had been here and that we should leave. There were no signs of another campsite. I think I knew at that point, but I didn't want to admit it to myself. We started packing up camp, and just as we were getting ready to hike out, I saw it. I just caught a glimpse. It was watching us through the trees. Out of curiosity, maybe. I don't know. But the moment it caught me looking back at it, the creature fled. And it was no human, but I already knew that. I'd bet the creature stood about 7 or 8 feet tall at least. From a distance, it looked like a large black mass. It could have disguised itself in the shadows easily enough, if not for the fresh snow cover on the trees. Its face was unmistakably ape-like. If Bigfoot was indeed real, I was staring right at it. I was shocked at how quickly and quietly it moved through the trees. And then the creature was gone, as if it never existed to begin with. So there we were, standing frozen in our tracks, both of us just looking at each other. I mean, what do you do when you see something like that? It was like a scene out of a movie, only this was real life, and I had no script to follow. My partner and I were completely on edge, glancing around to make sure we were really alone. The eerie silence of the woods was amplified by the reality of what we just saw. We packed up our gear as quickly as possible, making sure we didn't leave anything behind. The whole time, I kept looking over my shoulder, half expecting to see the creature again. The hike back to the car felt like an eternity. Every sound in the forest made us jump. We both knew we were being paranoid, but it was like the woods themselves had come alive. The thought of the creature following us, watching us from behind the trees, weighed heavily on our minds. When we finally reached the car, we threw our gear in the trunk and got in as fast as we could, locking the doors and starting the engine. It was only when we were on the road, miles away from where we saw the creature, that we finally started to breathe easier. We didn't talk much on the drive back. What could we say? It was like we both needed time to process what we'd experienced. I remember glancing over at my partner, his face pale, his eyes wide, and I knew he was thinking the same thing as me. What the heck just happened? Later, at a diner on the way home, we finally started to talk about it. We went over the details again and again, trying to make sense of what we'd seen. Was it really Bigfoot, or was it just our minds playing tricks on us? The rational part of me kept trying to find a logical explanation, but deep down, I knew what I saw. Since that day, I've never felt the same about the woods. I still love hiking and being outdoors, but there's always a little voice in the back of my head, wondering if I'll see it again. I guess it's one of those experiences that changes you, you know? I don't know if I believe in Bigfoot, but I believe in what I saw that day. And every time I hear a story about someone seeing something unexplainable in the woods, I can't help but think back to that morning, to those footprints in the snow, and to that large black mass disappearing into the trees. It's a memory that's as clear as day, and one that I'll never forget. So next time you're out in the woods, keep an eye out. You never know what might be out there, watching you from behind the trees. But hey, don't let my story keep you from enjoying the great outdoors. Just remember, sometimes reality is stranger than fiction. I worked for a gas company that serviced the city of Fort Stockton, Texas, for about 15 years. Most of my job was installing gas meters and doing inspections. Not the most exciting gig, but the pay was decent, and my dad had worked for the same company. Fort Stockton was about a two-hour drive from Big Bend National Park. If you've ever been to the area, you'll know there have been some strange goings on around there. It's a beautiful place, don't get me wrong, but I've heard one too many ghost stories to be ever going down there at night. I'm not saying I'm superstitious, but there are things out there that shouldn't be, and I've seen one of them for myself. I was running late on my last job of the day. It was just before 6 o'clock when I got a call about a potential gas leak. The house was a 45-minute drive into the desert, but when we get a call about a gas leak, it's urgent. It can't wait until tomorrow. Way too dangerous. It was dark when I was driving back to the shop. I couldn't tell what the animal was. I just saw a flash of black dart across the road. It ran right out in front of my truck. I didn't have time to stop. I hit the thing dead on, T-boned it. Whatever it was went skidding across the freeway and into the ditch. I pulled the truck over to assess the damage. The whole front end was smashed and smoke was pluming up from the radiator. This thing had to have been huge. If this were my own truck, I might have tried to limp it home and deal with it there, but it was a company truck, so I had to call my boss and then call the police to get a police report. I figured I'd deal with the truck first and then go and check on the thing that I had hit. My boss called a wrecker, and I waited on the side of the freeway for them and the police to show up. All of this is pretty standard for the police. They blocked off the shoulder of the freeway and wrote up a report confirming the incident and the damage to the truck. The officer took a look at the truck and asked if I thought I hit a bear. There was a lot of damage, he said. And he also said twice that he was surprised I wasn't injured. Luckily, I was in the company truck instead of my sedan, because apparently I don't think I'd be alive if I was. I told him I didn't think it was a bear, but I wasn't sure. I went along with the officer as he followed the blood trail of the animal, following it into the ditch. We eventually found it lying about 30 yards off the road down in some brush. We were both speechless when we saw it. We looked at each other and then back down at the body. Neither of us needed to say anything. We knew what the other was thinking. This just wasn't possible. The creature lying there dead in the ditch was a jaguar, a black jaguar. There was no mistaking it. Now I'm not a biologist or anything, but I've been to the zoo. I know what a jaguar looks like. I know what a bobcat looks like. I know what a mountain lion looks like. And I know what a house cat looks like. And this was a goddamn jaguar. The police officer ended up calling someone from Parks and Wildlife to come out. Luckily, the tow truck was behind schedule, so I got to hang around and see what they were going to say about it. Meanwhile, a whole fleet of vehicles showed up to retrieve the body. I thought that seemed strange, and everyone from the fleet looked really serious. A few of them even looked like undercover government officials to me. But what do I know? They pulled the dead jaguar onto the road before loading it into the back of a covered pickup truck. And I'll tell you again, this was definitely a jaguar. These things are claimed to be extinct in Texas, though they used to be native to the area. The last confirmed jaguar was supposedly shot in 1948. If you ask Parks and Wildlife, they'll tell you there are no jaguars in the state. None at all. The wildlife guy looked me right in the eyes and told me it was a melanistic mountain lion, not a jaguar. I pointed to the body and said, "You and I both know that isn't a mountain lion." He told me if I kept going on about jaguars, that he was going to have to call an ambulance to have me checked out for concussion or brain injury. The look on his face told me he wasn't joking, and I took that as an indication to shut up. Before he left me alone, he asked to see my phone, and I knew for certain that if I didn't hand it over, I would likely find myself in a padded room that night. The only thing he looked at was my camera files. I watched as he even quickly maneuvered himself through my deleted and hidden folders in my camera app. He eventually gave me back the phone when he didn't find anything. I mean, he was very stealthy and was no way just a normal old Parks and Wildlife guy. And then that was that. The tow truck came and I caught a ride back with them, knowing full well that there was a dead jaguar in the back of the Parks and Wildlife truck, even though they claimed it was something else. Maybe this isn't the right show for this story. But I don't know who else to tell. I don't know what the cover-up is about. It's not like this is some mythical beast. These things are real animals. We know they exist in the world. And I can tell you firsthand that, while they might have been extinct in Texas at one point, they are back now, or at the very least they are being hidden nearby. And this one escaped. I'm a dog catcher, and yes, the job is even less glamorous than it sounds. But really, there isn't a dog out there that I can't catch. I've been doing this kind of work long enough that I've uncovered all of the tools of the trade. I know how to read an animal's body language. I know when to use sedation, and when a soft word alone will do the trick. Since I live in a small community, most of the animal control calls come my way. There isn't a big team taking shifts. It's me when your cat's stuck in a tree, and it's me when your dog takes a chunk out of the mailman. I guess I work with more than just dogs, huh? Maybe I should start introducing myself in a different way. What I wanted to illustrate was that my profession is in animals. A dog, a cat, a turtle, sure. I can handle those kinds of things. What my profession did not prepare me for, however, was monsters. This is the part when you laugh, get it out of your system. I know it sounds ridiculous, but I'd rather not beat around the bush. We were dealing with a monster in my small town, and since everybody thought it was some wild animal, the hunt for the beast became my burden. It was a coyote or a bear, or one of the last mountain lions left in the area. That's what everybody told me. I didn't particularly want to deal with any of those animals, but who else was going to do it? They'd all succumb to the same tranquilizer used on the Rottweilers and Mastiffs, wouldn't they? I packed up my stuff, filled my van with a fresh tank of gas, and started looking for the thing I didn't want to find. I'm good at my job, remember? That means, unfortunately, I found that monster after all. I found it pulling a garbage bag out of a dumpster, dragging the shiny black plastic across the pavement, while paper cups and sandwich scraps spilled out of the seams. It wouldn't have been an uncommon sight. I'd seen dogs in the same position, if it wasn't for the size of the thing. An animal gets close to the size of a human being. You start getting nervous. When it's bigger than a human being, you get outright afraid. When it dwarfs you completely, like this creature did that night, your blood freezes in your veins. I wasn't supposed to be hunting something like this. I'm a dog catcher, not a monster hunter. But there I was, illuminating the scene with the spotlight attached to my driver's side mirror. It was easily twice my size. Its hair was short and curly, covering it from snout to tail. And its eyes were wide, forward-facing, and full of venom. It didn't like the light, I guess. It turned at me and glared. Its limbs didn't bend quite like a dog's. They were long and folded up kind of like a person's would. Anatomically, as far as its shape was concerned, the beast looked more like a man pretending to be a dog. A giant man, maybe. A giant man with sharp canine teeth and clawed fingers. Thick strands of spit ran from its mouth and snot bubbled around its nose. It wasn't sick, I don't think. It was just hungry, drooling as it made its way through its meal of trash. I interrupted that meal. I should have known better. By the time it turned toward me, I was already outside of the van. I had opened my driver's side door, rolled down the window, and I was using the empty frame to steady the barrel of my rifle. It was loaded with a dart that would knock the creature on its rear end. It would be snoring within minutes. I didn't want to stand around and wait for it to attack, so I fired that rifle and I hit my mark. It didn't go down. It came at me. I fired again, hit it again, and failed to slow it down for a second time. I had just cleared the doorway, jumped into the van and pulled my legs into the cab, when the creature slammed into the open door. It crashed shut, and I heard the beast's claws skittering on the pavement outside. I had already retreated into the passenger seat. I could afford to sit by that open window, offering my neck or my shoulder to that beast's gnashing teeth. I couldn't roll the window up either, not without ducking under the opening and praying that it wouldn't see me. It burst through the open window, and its shoulders got stuck in the frame. Its head lurched forward, one push at a time. Bite by bite, chewing on the air, it inched closer to me. Soon, its yellow teeth were going to be sinking into my skin. I kicked it when I could, pummeling it with my heels. It was knocked back a few times, flinging strands of spit all around the interior. When it slumped to the side and hit the van's horn, The creature yowled. It scurried backward, jerking out of the window with a loud plop. I guessed what to do next and jumped for the horn, laying on it and watching the beast run. It must have had a good pair of ears for sound to hurt like that. Either way, I was thankful, but I hadn't done my job. I made a recommendation. The next night, I wanted the community to create as much ruckus as they could. A few of us honked our horns into the late hours of the night. Others blasted music and few set off fireworks that weren't exactly legal. We didn't see the creature leave town, but we also never saw it again. I'm a dog catcher, right? That thing wasn't any type of dog that I'd ever seen, and chasing it away was the best that I could do. Man, that night was something else, I'll tell you. The whole town pulled together like one big team, united by the shared terror of that beast. I guess fear is one way to bring folks together, huh? After that night of noise and chaos, the creature vanished from our town, but the experience lingered on in our minds. People started to treat each other a bit differently, with more understanding, knowing that we had all faced the same fear. As for me, well, I went back to my regular duties, chasing down stray dogs and making sure they got back to their owners safe and sound. But every once in a while, I'd catch a glimpse of something out of the corner of my eye, or hear a rustle in the bushes, and my heart would skip a beat. The memory of that creature's yellow teeth and that ungodly yowl was etched in my mind, always ready to remind me of the terror I had faced. I'm coming to you from upstate Massachusetts. I've had an ongoing experience over the past couple of months that I think is right up your alley. I'm a gardener, and due to the area I live in, I usually work for some very rich people. I'll usually work for the same estate or mansion for as long as they'll have me. It's more predictable than you'd think, honestly. My last job before this one lasted 8 years, but my boss moved down south and sold off his mansion. I got sacked during the off-season, so no one was really hiring. When I found a job at a new estate, I honestly felt pretty lucky. When I first got hired, I was told that the only people who lived at the estate were a couple in their 30s. The home had been passed down on the husband's side, and it was plopped in the middle of nowhere. They couldn't rent it out because it was too far from the ocean or any attractions. They didn't have any pets or kids. It was just the couple, Mr. and Mrs. Davis, and US staff members. The first problem was that they didn't have enough staff for the place. The Davis's garden was big enough that it could have used 5 gardeners for the upkeep, but they only hired 2 of us. Normally, I would have taken that as a red flag, but like I said, I needed the money. I started in the fall, so I was thrown headfirst into planting season. I spent most of those first few weeks just getting rid of the dead trees that had overtaken the place. It's normal for a landscaper to miss a tree or two, but it was like the whole garden had died. The garden hadn't been properly taken care of in years, and a lot of the estate was like that too. Some areas of the house had been straight up abandoned. We had our staff quarters out back, and those were fine. But the rest of it? Half of the rooms in the main house looked like they hadn't been touched for decades. One night, I asked the chef about it, since he had been on staff the longest. I thought maybe the house had been someone's 3rd or 4th home, and they had stopped caring about it because no one actually lived here. But he said the house had been the main home for Mr. Davis's family since he'd been born. Things didn't start going downhill until about 6 months before I was hired. Most of the staff assumed that the money was running out. That was the easiest way to explain such a drastic shift. I believe that explanation too. Until one night, I stayed out in the garden after dark. I wanted to finish building some plant beds so that I could be done for the week. That way I could spend a few days in the nearest town and see if there was any last-minute work there. I was by myself, at the back of the gardens, and I was working right at the edge of the forest line. My flashlight died. Before I could head for the house, I felt someone pressing down on my shoulder. A blast of cold air rushed through me. It was so frigid that it gave me the shakes. I heard a pair of footsteps walking away from me, toward the main house. Now it was dark out, but between the moon and the lights from the mansion, I could see a little bit, and I knew there was no one out there except me. But I could hear those footsteps. It was unmistakable. I couldn't explain it, and I didn't want to. I grabbed my tools and headed back to the staff quarters as fast as I could. I was trying not to make too big a deal out of it, but I was shaken up. I knew what I felt. That was only the first time I felt the presence of something else. Over the next few weeks, it kept happening. Something happened every couple of days. I started keeping a journal to record my experiences, just so I would know I wasn't crazy. Usually I would be working in the garden or alone in the kitchen, but it didn't really matter. The pattern was the same. The nearest light source would go out. I'd feel someone touching me, like my elbow or a pat on the back, as if they were asking me to move over. Then, a blast of cold. It felt like instant hypothermia. After the fourth or fifth time, I couldn't take it anymore. I asked the other gardener, Jeff, if anything weird had happened to him. And at first, he laughed it off like nothing was wrong. I thought maybe I was the only one. But the next time it happened, we were together. And he felt it, too. Apparently, this thing had been freaking Jeff out at the same time it started visiting me. He just didn't want me to think he was crazy. I asked the other staff members and tried to be discreet about it. Two of the housekeepers, plus the chef, also felt that strange presence. We started working in pairs to make sure no one was ever alone. We didn't know what this thing was or what it could do, after all. It slowed down everyone's productivity, but the Davises either didn't notice or didn't care. One of the housekeepers found a new job and booked it out of here. The rest of us are only sticking it out because we don't have anywhere else to go. It's not like the presence, or spirit, or whatever it is, has really tried to hurt us. But Jeff thinks that if it's a ghost, it's only a matter of time before things escalate. We'll see. I'm trying to find work before the new year because I don't know how much longer I can take this. If things do get worse, or the spirit becomes more active, I'll get back in touch to let you know. I hope it doesn't come to that, but I'm sure that you and your listeners would be interested in a follow-up. Thanks for listening. I really appreciate it. This next story comes to us from a listener in Oregon. I just wanted to jump in here and say that I'm not sure how much I believe this one. But then again, who knows what all really exists out there? So anyway, here it is. Tumalo Falls in Oregon has always been my favorite place to hike. I've been hiking most of my life. It started when I was real young. Back in those days, my dad would carry me in a pack on his back for miles and miles, up the sides of hills and down into canyons. Every family vacation we ever took was a hiking trip. When I first moved to Oregon, I naturally started looking for the best hiking spots to spend my weekends and time off work. Tumalo Falls was easily the best. I loved hiking to the top of the waterfall, and I loved having the view of the waterfall as I hiked toward it. I also loved that there were plenty of off-the-beaten-path places to explore, but always a trail nearby and the sound of the waterfall to guide you, especially if you wound up getting yourself turned around. Also, there weren't many people there. I was stunned by how rarely I ran into other hikers. One day, I did run across a hiker, though, who seemed somehow strange. To me, he looked paranoid and was sweating and struggling to maintain his composure. He came straight up to me and very seriously asked me where we were, and I told him we were at Tumalo Falls. He asked what year it was, and I told him it was 2007, which it was. There was an unmistakable look of relief that spread across his face as he realized he was wherever he was supposed to be. He then told me to turn around, "Don't go any further into those woods." I asked why not, and he told me to just listen to him as he ran off toward the parking area. I am not someone that is easily scared off, and I was familiar with the area. So in fact, it only inspired me to walk further in. Whatever had shaken him up in there, I wanted to find it. I seemed to walk forever, and nothing really stood out to me as being terrifying or worrisome. I couldn't figure out what had caused the guy to behave in such a way, so I just chalked it up to something I would never figure out. When I turned around to head back, though, I did start to notice something very strange. The walking paths that were so evident only moments before now weren't visible. I wondered if I had really walked that far off the path, and that I just couldn't see them anymore. Well, the idea of that made me panic a little bit. I remembered my dad telling me that if you're ever lost in the woods, you should set up some kind of marker so you can tell if you're walking in circles. Fortunately, I had a red handkerchief in my pocket, so I tied it around a slim tree branch, then started exploring the area. It didn't take long for me to start noticing more weird stuff. I came across an area in the mud where it looked like several horses had come through. I tried counting and figured at least 10 or 11 horses had come through, all heading in the same direction. There was no indication they'd wandered from their path, so I assumed there were riders, maybe trail riders from the local stable club. I decided to follow the hooves for a while and see if I might come up on the group. Maybe they'd have some idea of what had happened to my wild-eyed new friend I just met further down the trail. When I came over the hill, though, I couldn't believe my eyes. It wasn't a bunch of riders from the stable club. It was a bunch of what looked like cowboys on horseback, and at the bottom of the hill were several covered wagons, the type you'd see in an old Western movie. I figured they must be some kind of reenactment, maybe of the Oregon Trail, so I decided to approach and ask. I was impressed with the authenticity of their costumes and the wagons, and wanted to see them up close. When they saw me approaching, though, they looked like they'd seen a ghost. Now, this is where I should probably tell you that I am a dark-skinned person. My mother is Indian, and my father is Pakistani. While I'm not a Native American, I probably look close enough to these folks. So all at once, I find myself with several guns pointed right at me. They started yelling, asking me what tribe I belong to and scanning the horizon, as if they thought there might be more of me coming. I still wasn't sure what was going on, but thought their reception of me was really off and old-fashioned. I'd even go so far as to say inappropriate, even if they were trying to stay in character, and I proceeded to tell them as much. This is when they just looked at me, even more confused, and asked me what the hell I wanted. I told them I'd come to compliment them, but had changed my mind. They said something about my friend having already been by there, and not to send anyone else. Then I heard a woman comment on how funny we dressed. Then I turned to walk back the other way, and that's when one of them shot the ground by my feet to hurry me along. Only then did I realize the guns they were aiming at me were real, and I set off running as fast as I could until I found that handkerchief. I grabbed it from the tree and headed back the direction I'd come from when I first tied it. All at once, after I'd run a little bit, I realized I could see the trails again. I turned and looked, and the trails stretched back as far as the eye could see. I have no explanation for why they weren't visible to me before that. Well, mostly no explanation. I read online a few weeks after that about how portals to the past have opened up in secluded areas a few times throughout history. I'm convinced that's exactly what happened to me that day. Believe it or not, this is a true story. The details are just too vivid. I work in the real estate business and have been flipping houses for about 2 years now. Although I've seen a lot of weird stuff over the years in basements of our houses, I've never seen anything quite like this. And I wanted to write into you because maybe your viewers would have some idea of what is going on in this home on Long Island. So this house is very old. I think it dates back to around the late 1800s. The style is a typical Queen Anne, with high-pitched roofs, a large wraparound porch, old decorative shutters, gorgeous wood trim, and massive stained glass windows. The whole house is actually in great shape for its age. In fact, it's almost like the house hasn't aged at all. The previous owners were a couple in their 90s, who both died in the master bedroom on the very same day. I obviously found that unusual, but didn't think much about it at this point. They didn't have any kids or other family, so unfortunately the house ended up for auction. In these auctions, they don't show photos of the inside of the home, only the outside. It's a risk, but I wanted to bet on it. So I put in my best bid, and I won. I was planning on doing a complete overhaul and renovation. Many houses in the house flipping business are foreclosures. They usually haven't been well maintained by their owners and typically have garbage thrown about, windows broken, doors off their hinges, and sometimes even graffiti all over the place. You know the type. We flippers go into these old houses with boarded up windows and make them look beautiful, or at least nice enough for a young family to move into. Usually, at a minimum, the kitchen and bathrooms need to be completely gutted and redone. The bedrooms usually need carpets ripped up and replaced with hardwood. The light fixtures need to be replaced. However, none of this was the case at this old manor. When we opened the front door, it was like it was frozen in time. Nearly every surface was spotless and in great condition. The kitchen had a working gas stove, a refrigerator that worked, and a shiny, clean sink. I just couldn't believe my eyes when I opened up the toilet seat to see perfectly clean white porcelain. Now, I knew that the couple had died in that house, but I didn't know the circumstances. When I opened up the door to the master bedroom, however, I found out exactly what had happened. The entire attic had collapsed down into the bedroom. It was a terrible sight. I could look up through the ceiling since the floorboards were open wide, and I could see all the way to the roof. And there was a whole mess all throughout that room. But I decided to look at it as positively as I could, and figured that we'd just make the fixed master bedroom have high vaulted ceilings. I carried on with the renovation as planned, but the whole time we were having the weird troubles. When we'd try to unscrew something, we'd turn around and the screw would be back in place. When we tried to paint the walls in the hallway, our paintbrushes would go missing. Every little job and project that we try to accomplish seemed to have a problem. When we removed the stove to replace it with a new stainless steel model, my friend who was helping me started getting a terrible cough and could barely carry it out of the room. Once we got outside the threshold of the room, though, his cough just stopped. Some of my crew were saying they were hearing weird noises. My friend was working in the bathroom when he heard someone laughing behind him. He thought it was another member of the crew, but when he turned around, no one was there. He walked out into the hallway, but no one was there either. Then, he walked outside only to see that everyone else was out there, eating lunch. No one had been in the house for at least 30 minutes. The next day, the landscapers came to lay out some new shrubbery. We didn't tell any of them about what had been going on, didn't want to spook them. But the next day at lunch, they came up to us acting fake mad that we were pranking them. Apparently, their tools were lost, and they couldn't find them. I mean, it was only two shovels, but it was enough to delay their work. We promised them we didn't take the shovels, and eventually somebody did find them upstairs in the bedroom. No one confessed to moving them, so we were all confused as to how they could have gotten up there. So, it came to be that I didn't like being in the house any longer than I had to, and we started making quick work with the remaining renovations. My main concern was whoever moved in there next, and how they would experience the house. I recently found out that the original owners, the elderly couple, had been discussing selling the home in favor of a condo down south. Apparently, just the day before they got killed by the collapsing attic, they had been looking on Zillow and sending links to their friends. I don't want to be too spooked and sound too strange, but maybe the house heard them. I just think it was odd that that attic collapsed after all those years. I think maybe something in that house doesn't want to change. Or maybe the house itself didn't want the new gadgets installed. It's just too weird. Well, we're finishing up renovations this week, and it'll be on the market in about 2 weeks' time. I'm hoping all goes well at the open house and for the new owners. I'll keep you updated if anything changes. Getting my diving certification has to be one of my proudest moments. It also led to one of the most terrifying experiences I've ever had. Despite having all the safety gear and precautions in place, I couldn't have prepared for this discovery. Recently, I had the opportunity to visit Indonesia. In Indonesia, there are many dive locations, ranging from popular to little known. I did some research and chose to explore the ancient seabeds. The spot is well known to the locals. They swim and wash there. But beneath the surface, a limestone bedrock housing fossils of sea life that is 100,000 years old. It was an opportunity to visit ancient coral and caves galore. My dive team consisted of four experienced divers. We were all incredibly excited. We had all the precautions in place, and we planned to set out on our expedition early in the morning. I couldn't wait to get out there. I hardly slept the night before from the anticipation. I had my lights, my guideline, and equipment all ready. I was loading up to travel when my diving partner called to tell me he couldn't make it. He had been vomiting the night before. Normally, divers pair up for safety, but we now had an uneven number. I had the most dive experience, so I would go solo, but my plan was to stay near the others in case something went wrong. I had no idea how wrong it would really go, how it would change my overview of diving in the future, and the fact that I can never unsee what I saw in those caves. The initial dive itself was pretty stellar. Everything went well, and we found exactly what we had been hoping to see. But when I delved deeper into the crags and canyons below, I came across a dark, dry cave. I broke the number one rule. While the other divers explored some of the coral on the walls, I turned down a different section and discovered a cave. It was enormous at the opening, but it funneled down smaller and smaller. I managed to squeeze through and came into a big open space. It was mostly dry with some pits maybe 3 feet deep. Because I could stand, I got my filming equipment ready and shot some footage. I kept hearing clicking, scratching above the sounds of the water outside, but they were indistinguishable as to what direction they were coming from. All sounds reverberate in a cave. It was beautiful inside, all the grooves and cuts in the walls from the flowing water over centuries. I remember standing back and taking it all in. This was unlike anything I had ever seen on a dive. I felt like I was hiking a cavern in the Midwest. There were jagged stalagmites I had to navigate around. Some of the stalactites nearly reached the floor they hung so low. It looked like an ice castle. It was glorious. I shot photos and footage for a long time, hoping to show just how beautiful and enormous this cave really was. I heard scratching right above me and clicks. I swore I saw movement, but when I jerked my camera upward, it went crashing to the cavern floor. A stalactite narrowly missed my face. Something had jarred it loose. My very expensive photo equipment lay shattered on the ground at my feet. I didn't have much time to mourn its loss. Something was moving on the ceiling. Fearing the worst, I attempted to scoop up the remains of the camera. If that giant calcium salt icicle came down from water pressure, this cave could become flooded very fast. Water began to pool around me. It was ankle deep in no time at all. It was silently seeping down from above me. I needed to get out. My carelessness about leaving my group and need for adventure had put me in a life or death situation. I started to panic. Everything around me looked the same calcium crystals, muddy water. I couldn't remember which way I had come in. I saw movement above me once again and heard clicking. Another mass of stalactite fell behind me. I looked up. Something was crawling on the ceiling. I caught it out of the corner of my eye as it scrambled behind a mass of crystal. I stupidly said, "Hello," but my voice was muffled from my equipment and fear dragging a lump down my throat. A huge chunk of the ceiling fell just feet from me. That got me in gear. I needed to get out. I needed to find the exit I had squeezed through. I made my way to the wall and started looking for the hole I came in through. Something was moving on the massive ceiling above me. When I looked up, I immediately stumbled back. This naked-looking thing on four legs was clinging to the wall. It was pale and covered in veins. My light found it, and I fell to the floor. Its face looked gaunt and horrible. There was a gaping hole of a mouth and big black eyes. I screamed. I screamed and choked on my own breath. The creature began to descend down the wall with lightning speed. It was coming toward me, clicking and scraping huge trails down the wall as it moved. It moved so fast. Chunks of calcium were raining down on me as I felt around on the wall looking for the way out. The creature was maybe 20 feet away. It looked incredibly human, but insane and horrifying. Somehow, I found the hole in the wall I had come through. I squeezed through it. I stumbled into the pool and swam for my life, back to the boat. I have swam with sharks. I have jumped out of airplanes. But I have never been so scared in my life. That thing. It wasn't human. I honestly don't know what it was, and I don't really want to think about it at all anymore.